On this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch, we dive into James Franklin's pre-Ohio State press conference, have an interview with Bill Landis of The Podcast, who covers Ohio State, and dive into our predictions for the Penn State-Ohio State game this Saturday on this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome into the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat reporter for the Center Daily Times, joined as always by Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, we are off and running for a week that is going to be a doozy.
It's Tuesday night when we're recording this. I only know that because I just looked at my computer to be like, yep, it's Tuesday night.
I thought it was Monday. I'm not going to lie. I've been having a tough go with the day of the week thing.
It's wild. I mean, this is one of those weeks where I was driving home from James Franklin's press conference this afternoon, John. And I had like one of those moments where, you know, you're noticing like Mount Nittany, the leaves are changing. It looks like it's fall. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're approaching late October. Like it is, I don't know where the season's gone, but all of a sudden, like we are at this massive week. It's going to be a slog to the finish. It's going to be a long week for us. But we're dug in and it's a doozy as it always is.
Yeah, I prefer cooler weather. I always have, always will. But when I went outside to go to the presser, I initially had shorts on because I just, you know, usually wear shorts in October. And weird. Immediately was like, this ain't going to work. And I had to go back inside and put joggers on with this hoodie. But no, it is like we're already there. Like, right. Like playoff rankings come out soon near the end of this month or early next month.
I believe on Halloween. I think the first.
Yeah. It's that Tuesday. I don't know what day of the week Halloween is because I'm bad. It is.
It's the 31st. I just checked.
Perfect. Halloween night. We will get our first playoff rankings before we get too far down the road though. If you are enjoying listening, watching this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. Subscribe on YouTube if you're watching here, right below the screen here. Leave those ratings, leave those reviews on Apple Podcasts. It always helps us out.
All the five stars. We want the five stars.
That's right. All the five stars. The Drew Allers, if you will. Perfect. Which is, I'm just going to go ahead and pat myself on the back there for that segue because that's some elite.
That was
stuff
a plus.
We're talking about.
That was elite. That wasn't just great. Right. That was elite.
That when we went from great to elite real quick on this pod. Drew Aller was kind of surprisingly, I think, a major talking point today at James Franklin's press conference. A subject matter and a person that you and I have covered extensively over the last 2 years, you especially with his recruitment and everything, broke everything down. I had, of course, you can find all of that at The Athletic and on Audrey's Twitter. I had the long feature heading into this season about him, his family, his upbringing, kind of how he got to this moment. But Drew is like a centerpiece to all of this week, and his homecoming to Ohio was a major part of that.
Yeah, we talked with Aller Tuesday afternoon on Zoom before James Franklin spoke.
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Well,
we can't move 11 a.m. to the 11, afternoon. That because then I'm always going to be waking up in the afternoon.
I always shift 11 a.m. up to like saying it's afternoon, but I'm technically wrong. But
not in this household.
But the point stands that Drew was asked about how many tickets he's expected to have Saturday in the horseshoe. And he's like, honestly, I don't know. I left that to my parents. And, you know, it is interesting in that you look at this matchup and you say, okay, Drew Aller from Medina, Ohio, grows up an Ohio State fan. His recruitment is so unique in that he wasn't that dynamic prospect out of the gate, which especially when you're recruiting quarterbacks, that's a little bit unusual because typically, I mean, I've written stories about guys who are in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade who are getting offers, right? Like it's different recruitments with quarterbacks across the board. But this week, you also have Kyle McCord on the other side from St. Joe's Prep. Jersey guy goes to school in Philadelphia, and then he suits up at Ohio State. So like, I get that, like you have the different intersections there, but the thing I think Penn State fans need to remember, and it came up a lot this week, which is kind of a little bit baffling to me because I remember writing this and I pulled up the story. Like I've been writing this since June of 2021. A big reason why Penn State landed and was able to get to the finish line with Drew Aller was because of Mike Yurcich. I mean, it was Mike Yurcich who made the first point of contact and said, hey, I'm really intrigued by this kid. And reached out and asked to see his film. it was Mike Yurcich who Drew Allard came to camp for because he wanted to impress him, right? Like, to me, and again, John, like, you get to know the subjects. Like, I went to Medina High School to watch Drew play his senior year. And I remember at that time, right, that was the James Franklin USC rumors. They were, like, reaching a fever pitch at that point, and Penn State was playing Ohio State the next day. And I just remember having this conversation with Drew and being like, so if something happens and James isn't here, like, what happens to you? Are you still going to be the quarterback? And the thing that he told me that night, which is still held true and which was alluded to this week, he's like, as long as Coach Yurcich is there, I will be there. Like, that was the relationship that mattered most in this recruitment. That's why Drew Aller is here. Yes, Penn State matters. James Franklin matters. All these other factors are at play. But we spent a lot of time this week kind of looking back at Drew's recruitment as opposed to looking ahead, which I get it. A game of this magnitude, especially with the Ohio and the Pennsylvania ties, you're going to have this. But yeah, Drew Aller certainly doesn't sound like someone who is like awestruck by going to play in the horseshoe. Or like, I didn't get that vibe at all. Very much like standard operating procedure around here, it seemed like.
Yeah, very, very poised, which is what like we expect from him at this point. And it's what, I mean, James talks about it all the time with Drew. One of the things that I think is most interesting, you mentioned that like his recruitment kind of wasn't usual. Like COVID definitely played an aspect in all of that. So did like, he's a coach's kid, but who didn't play quarterback. One of the things that I had in that story was that like his dad would not let him play quarterback because he did not want to have...
Yeah,
because he did not want to have the coaches, you know, the stereotypical coach's son gets to be quarterbacks. He's the coach's kid. So Drew actually didn't start playing quarterback till his dad wasn't his coach anymore. And that was in middle school. One of the coaches asked if anyone wanted to play quarterback. Essentially, he raised his hand and that was the start of it. Right. And
I think it worked out for him.
Yeah, I think it did, too. But yeah, this is, you know, the idea of him being from Ohio, I think, has caught a lot of people's attention. But for him and for this program, James mentioned it, too, that he didn't think he was going to have to talk to Drew about this, but his press conference with us was, his, I think he said, his third interview of the day. And he's like, with how much I've been asked about this, I guess I'm going to have to talk to him about it. I don't know if he does. Drew seems perfectly fine. Like he doesn't seem like that's something that's getting to his head or bothering him whatsoever. I do think, though, he is like, and this will get a lot of talk because people have talked about, you know, they haven't played in a close game and all that stuff. I think Drew Aller's absolutely ready for this moment. Like, I don't think this game is going to be too big for him or anything like that. But that was, yeah, that was one of the dominating subjects at today's press conference, which I think was like a little surprising to both of us. One of the other things that came up too, though, that was interesting to both you and I was the discussion about Penn State's identity, right? Mm-hmm. And what this team is right now. And I think James's take on this is really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, his whole thing is that they know what they are right now. I was just pulling up the quote, so I had it in front of me. They know what they are right now, and essentially you have to play to those strengths, right? Like, this is a team, we've talked ad nauseum about the explosive plays and all of that. I don't think there were any viral presser moments today, at least.
He was actively avoiding such things. He made sure... to note that he was avoiding such things.
Yeah.
Said that he was getting long-winded. Was it afterward?
What did he say? He wanted to keep it manageable or something like that.
Yeah, but he was curt with you at the end because he had realized that he was allowing himself to be too open about things.
Yeah, he was giving a lot of very long answers today. And then I said to him at the end, I'm like, I think you're going to want to give me a short answer because I was asking about JB Nelson's health and that we know how these subjects go and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I mean, to the point of their identity as an offense, they know that what they are right now is not what they're going to be at the end of the season, right? I think that's safe to say. Teams change, they evolve. They peak and hopefully, like, if you're a Penn State fan, listen to this, hopefully this is not the peak right now, right?
I can't imagine that it is.
I don't think so either. But they're figuring out what their strengths are, and that's kind of dominating time of possession, the short check downs. James Franklin said, you know, he said as a long time, as an OC, as a coach, you spend like so much of your career begging your quarterback to take the check down. And he's like, and here with Drew, he's taking the check down and he's taking it all the time. And that's something too. Like he didn't want to say it in a bad way that Drew Aller's been a game manager, but he has been, right? I mean, like there's been elements where everybody wants to see Drew throw the ball down the field, But that's not what they're asking him to do. And he's doing what they want him to do really, really well. And he's being efficient and he's not turning the ball over. And so, yeah, I don't think this is what the offense is going to look like long term. I don't think, you know, the rest of the year. I will say, John, one of the things I've been doing a lot of different podcasts and interviews this week, and something that I was asked from an Ohio State show, they said, do you think Penn State's purposely been holding back and not throwing the ball down the field because of this matchup? Where do you stand on that?
So I think James kind of told us where they're at with that, or at least where he wants us to think they're at on that with the last bit of his quote here from ASAP Sports, though, on the transcript. It's right there. The very last sentence he gives to the question about the identity. One of the big mistakes you can make is to get to certain games that some people say are this or that. You try to be something that you haven't been in the previous 6 weeks.
Yep.
To me, I thought that was telling. That's an indication. Yes. Yeah, that's an indication they are not going to suddenly open. Now, they're going to do more. I don't think this is going to be like a bland offense. They're going to do different things because it is a bigger game. Really, it's their first big game of the year because, well, Iowa's really bad.
Oh, Previola package. Is that the alert? Is that the siren? Is this the week?
I don't think it is. I do think like they do want to stretch the field more, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, that this is the opportunity to take some deep shots. This is not going to be a team, though, that has, like, I don't know, even 8 air yards per attempt, right? They're mm-hmm. I think, lowest in the Big Ten in air yards per attempt. It's a very low number. I think it's below 5 at this point, below 4, somewhere around there.
Yeah, their passes of 20-plus yards are one of the worst in the country.
Yeah, and they don't. Yeah, and they don't, like, they're not taking a ton of deep shots every game. And part of that, I think, is that they don't have to. The other kind of mislead that could be at play here is, you know, he's saying, you know, you're not going to suddenly turn into something that you haven't been. Well, maybe they have been this kind of team. They just haven't shown it yet, right? You know what I mean? Like, there is wiggle room for them to be a little bit varied in their approach. But I think generally speaking, we're going to see that Penn State wants to force turnovers on defense. They're going to want to control the ball on offense and take 6 minutes a clock off with a bunch of 7 6-yard runs down the field, lean on Catron Allen, lean on Nick Singleton, and allow those guys to be the reason you win games. I think that can work against Ohio State. I don't know that it will, and I don't know that it's going to be what they do, because I do think they're going to take enough shots to back off that defense.
You have to. I think you have to, at least, right? I say this as, like, I think that's what you should do. But
yeah, and we'll talk more about the game itself in depth here, but I do think, like, James kind of left the door open for them to be a little bit varied in their approach and a little bit varied in what they do. You mentioned status update, though. So what is, before we cut to the next segment of the pod, what is the status update of JB Nelson?
JB Nelson. James Franklin said they expect him back this season. Now, does that mean this week? Does that mean next week? Does that mean November against Michigan? I don't know. But they do expect him.
Does it mean a bowl game?
Could be. I mean, at some point this season, they expect him back. I also asked him about Vengo Wane because, again, this is – talk about a big spot for somebody potentially to be in. Yes, they think very highly of Venga. Yes, he's a massive human being. But yes, he's also a redshirt freshman. And I think going into this type of environment, you have to keep that in mind. We'll see more Wednesday at practice and whether Nelson is there or not. But again, the brief status update, because James Franklin wanted to keep it short today. Kind of, maybe.
But only
with injuries. Only with me and only with injuries.
Only with you and injuries, though. Not
yeah, only for the last question of the presser. Didn't matter that we've had diatribes throughout this thing. But when it comes to injuries, we're gonna keep it brief. So, I mean, yeah, we'll see what it means when we get the availability report, probably at about, 10 a.m. Saturday?
It'll be 10 a.m. Saturday. I think we'll see tomorrow if he's – when the media mm-hmm. can view practice, if he's present there. Because he hasn't been, basically, since the Northwestern game. We haven't seen him anyways at those Wednesday availabilities. So, I think, you know, we could potentially, you know, get some information tomorrow, whether he's present or not present. And then, like you mentioned – we'll all be tweeting them out at 10 a.m. on Saturday, availability reports. The good news is for Penn State, otherwise, there doesn't seem to be a ton going on there with injuries that we know of, mm-hmm. right? Nothing from UMass that happened. Trey Wallace looks like he's full go. No, injury issue holding him back or anything like that. But let's get into the Ohio State analysis. And let's start by doing that with, as we teased earlier, an interview with Bill Landis of the podcast covering Ohio State.
We are joined now by friend of show, our first ever guest here on the Nittany Dispatch, Bill Landis of the podcast. Bill does a tremendous job covering Ohio State football, his 10th year on the beat, former colleague of mine, both at The Athletic and at the Daily Collegian, the reunion of your Lady Lions beat reporters. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I didn't know I was the first guest for you guys. I feel honored and now nervous.
Well, you know, yeah, that's what we like to do here. We like to keep people honest and nervous.
I think Audrey conveniently leaving out the important details here, evident by the hat you're wearing for our audio listeners, Bill, with a Phillies hat on, because understands baseball and is an intelligent baseball fan, and is also going to enjoy some baseball the rest of the postseason still.
Yeah, unlike someone else here. Yeah,
that's right.
Just going to keep showing it off behind me. Those of you watching on YouTube, you see the World Series sign back there. Some of us are living in the past, which is a place that Penn State does not want to be this week. The Nittany Lions 1-8 against the Buckeyes during James Franklin's tenure. Bill, what have been your impressions of Ohio State so far? Because, you know, we watch them as much as we can, but you are there every single day keeping track of what in the world Ryan Day is doing.
Yeah, I guess I'll start on the defensive side, believe it or not, which is kind of weird when you're kind of diagnosing Ohio State, but their defense has been really good this year. They were improved last year under Jim Knowles in his first year as coordinator, but it kind of got away from them at the end of the season when they started playing some better teams, including Penn State. Like, that was sort of the start of a run of teams finding ways to get kind of explosive plays on Ohio State in a way that was not sustainable. And then I carried through for them to the Michigan game and certainly in the Peach Bowl that they lost to Georgia in the college football playoff. And this year they've gotten much better at that. They're kind of better across the board. I think they're going about it differently. They're not as aggressive as they were last year. Jim Knowles blitzed a ton. He's not blitzing a whole lot now. They're kind of playing it more straight up, but it's been effective. It's been a little bend but don't break, which I think has been frustrating for Ohio State fans at times, but they're keeping teams out of the end zone. I think they've allowed, what's it, 7 touchdowns now all year through 6 games. So that's pretty good. And they've been, that's like sort of been the strength of the team, I think, is their defense. And all three levels, I think, have played well for them. Offensively, it's been a little different. They've been a little inconsistent. There have been games where they've been absolutely terrible running the ball. Some games where it's looked better. Last week against Purdue, it looked better. And the passing game definitely has a high ceiling, but I don't know that we've seen it yet. It's different than what people have probably come to expect with like someone like CJ Stroud playing quarterback. And now we're seeing CJ Stroud in the NFL, how good he actually was. And perhaps that wasn't always appreciated when he was playing for Ohio State. So
sounds like there's something there, Bill. So I'm like, there's a little something there of people not appreciating Mr. Stroud.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL and college football are different, right? Yeah. I think you're asked to do different things in college, and there's some fair criticism, I think, of some of CJ's tenure, but what's unquestionable is that he is one of the best pure passers, I think, that's ever played college football. And Ohio State doesn't have that at the moment with Kyle McCord. They have a good quarterback in Kyle McCord who's, you know, gaining experience. He's now halfway through his first year as a starter. You've definitely seen high level play from him, the Notre Dame game being probably the best example of that. But you've also seen some head scratching moments, a couple turnovers, a couple like intentional grounding penalties where you're just like, what the heck were you thinking when you did that? So they're working through some stuff. I think last week was probably the best we've seen of their offense. If you want to count the Western Kentucky game, I guess you can, but that's a G5 team playing against Purdue on the road. And granted, Purdue's not the best Big Ten opponent, but I thought that was probably the most complete game Ohio State's played. And they did it without Emeka Ibuka, their second best receiver. They did it without Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams, two of their top running backs, and then lost the third running back in Chip Traynham during that game. And still, I thought, found a pretty good footing offensively. So if that, I don't know if that's a sign that they're getting ready to take off or not, but it was good timing, I guess, if it's going to be.
You mentioned that, that shift in identity, right, defensively. Is the offensive identity shifting too right now because of the step back from Stroud and McCord? And if so, like, how is it different?
It's a good question. I would say no, or maybe they need to, but they haven't yet. I think they're still trying to do, I think, a lot of the same things they were doing with CJ Stroud. They don't throw the ball down the field probably as much as they did with Stroud, who was a really good and accurate deep ball thrower. They still will attack you vertically, but there's more intermediate stuff there. Probably a little bit more quick passing game than they had with CJ Stroud. But It's still the Ryan Day offense. Like I think if Penn State fans were to flip on an Ohio State game this year, the plays would be recognizable. Like the way they try to go about business, I think would more or less look the same. The thing that's different with them, and it's less of a scheme thing and more of a personnel thing, is they are suffering from some deficiencies along the offensive line. They're just not quite as good there as they usually are. And that has shown up in a couple of key spots already this year. And I think is a huge storyline for this game coming up on Saturday.
They look human this year, Bill. That's been my takeaway. The world beater Buckeyes look like a very good team. Mm-hmm. Some might say an elite team. And this is the week where we like to revisit and see if Penn State is a great but not yet elite team. Maybe they make the jump there. Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot here because you were kind of the first guy to write a Drew Aller feature before he became the five-star, before really anybody knew about him, before he committed to Penn State. You were on the ground with, you know, the Ohio quarterback, this kid who's taken off during COVID. If you were starting today your own franchise and you get one choice at quarterback, are you taking Drew Aller or are you taking Kyle McCord?
Oh, man. That's
I said I was putting you on the spot.
You certainly have done that. Mm-hmm. That's tough. It's hard for me to answer because I'm not a Penn State expert. I just like watch them in passing. I feel like they're not really like unleashing Drew Aller to his full potential. So
fans' ears right now. You are preaching to the choir on that one.
So like what I think is his full potential, I probably would take him. Like the way they're playing and being used right now, I think I might take Kyle McCord. They're both five-star guys. I think Drew actually might have ended up being higher ranked than Kyle. So like, I'm not talking out of school here in terms of like recruiting rankings. Like it's a conversation worth having. And it's not like Kyle's got 2 years of work under his belt that makes you want that experience more. I think Drew probably has better tools, right? Size, strength, mm-hmm. arm talent, athleticism. I think all that would be in his favor if you stack the two up next to each other. Kyle's pretty savvy, I think. I don't have a read on that for Drew, like how much
we're gonna find out Saturday night.
I think we will too. I probably take Drew because I think the tools are better, but I think maybe right now you can make an argument that Kyle's playing a little better.
When you mentioned is
McCord a Phillies fan, Bill? Is there a connection there?
He is a Phillies fan. He's from New Jersey, but mm-hmm. he played at St. Joe's Prep in Philadelphia. I don't think he's like a across the board Philly sports fan. Like, I don't think he's an Eagles fan.
This is a problem.
Yeah, yeah. So, he's one of those.
Some red flags are being raised there.
Yeah,
yeah. Those are major red flags.
Right, but I'm pretty sure he is a Phillies fan. Yeah.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure we had that out there.
The offensive line and how much that could impact this game. Penn State's pass rush right now looks like one of the best in the country. Does Ohio State have the tackles to deal and frankly the endurance to deal with multiple guys that Penn State can rotate in that you would theoretically be starters on, you know, most elite teams in the country?
Yeah, I think you make a good distinction there because if it was just one guy, I think maybe you could scheme against it and more or less hold your own. The fact that Penn State can like put all its best guys out there at the same time if it wants to, or just kind of have them come at you in waves, is a different animal than what Ohio State has seen to this point. The best defensive line they've played is Notre Dame's, which is a good line, but not one that really gets after you. They're more like stout than they are like aggressive and overwhelming. I think Penn State's is overwhelming. So, and I don't think the tackle play for Ohio State has been particularly good this year. The right side, Josh Fryer, has been a little bit better than the left side, Josh Simmons, who is a transfer from San Diego State, who was not a particularly good player last year as a right tackle at San Diego State, and now he's playing left tackle at Ohio State, and he's had some hiccups, like penalties, like very untimely penalties. He's not like a down-by-down liability, but there's enough there, I think, that would worry you if you're Ohio State. I have to imagine it's the thing they're talking about the most in Ohio State's offensive staff meeting room is how do we help our offensive line up against what is probably the best. It could end up being the stiffest challenge they see all year, right? They're still going to play Michigan, and Michigan's defensive line is really good, but that's to me is more of like the tackle position and then the interior of that defensive line, and this is like pure havoc coming at you on the edges where I think Ohio State is most vulnerable on the offensive line. So it could be a real problem.
Yeah, I think that to me is the one edge where we can say this is where Penn State for sure has an advantage, right? And that has not been the case often in this game. And to me, it's like, again, I go back to the fact that this looks like a human level Ohio State team. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Bill. I mean, these defensive ends have been a handful, and I think they're going to be a handful. One of the things I'm writing this week is a story about Manny Diaz and how in the world this has been such a perfect fit here. And you look at just how this defense is playing. And now I know Ohio State fans, if they've stumbled upon the Nittany Dispatch, they're probably saying, well, yeah, who has Penn State played, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're hanging your hat on wins against Iowa and West Virginia at this point. But to me, we always talk about, especially in this matchup, going to be a lot of NFL scouts there Saturday, I would imagine, because there's a ton of NFL talent on both of these teams. We love to talk about the NFL matchups in this game. And last year, we all talked and wrote about, oh, Kalen King and Marvin Harrison Jr. And then we didn't see that matchup often. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we're probably going to hear a little bit more of that again this week. But I think Penn State has two really good corners in Kalen King and in Johnny Dixon. Bill, these receivers, when healthy, are a handful, mm-hmm. to put it mildly. Who, I guess, would you give the edge to there when you look at that matchup? Because I think, to me, like, this is going to be one of those things where we're sitting there Saturday afternoon saying, oh man, all these guys are going to make a ton of plays, I think.
Yeah. The looming question there is the health status, mm-hmm. of Emeka Ebuka, who looked like maybe he got an ankle sprain of some sort toward the end of the game against Maryland. Ohio State does not provide injury specifics, nor do they provide timelines for injuries. So we're just kind of guessing on that. But he did not play against Purdue.
They are two of the same. Two of the same. Yeah. In that
regard.
Are
you sure you're not on the Penn State beat?
Like sometimes it feels like it, yeah. In this regard in particular. He did not play against Purdue, did not travel to Purdue. We were at practice last Wednesday. We'll see guys like walking off the practice field. We didn't see him there, so no idea what his availability is. And Ryan Day has not even hinted at, like, oh yeah, we think we're going to get him back. Like, we have no clue. Maybe we'll learn more when we talk to Ryan Day this week. We don't have that yet. So that's a big piece that could be missing from Ohio State's offensive attack. But they still have Marvin Harrison Jr. And like Marvin alone is, I think, enough to scare probably every secondary. And that's no disrespect. That's no disrespect to Penn State's, because I think Penn State's secondary is excellent. I am curious what kind of matchups we see, because, like, especially with Emeka out, I think Marvin could play in the slot a little bit. He played in the slot a decent amount last week against Purdue. I don't know, will Penn State move their corners to play in the slot to cover him, or will they try to cover him with a nickel or a safety? I don't know the answer to that. And Ohio State, like, you know, they still have Brian Hartline on staff, which means they still have a loaded receiver room. There's a couple of five-star guys in waiting. One of them, Brandon Innes, scored a touchdown last, mm-hmm. week. Another, Carnell Tate, had a 60-yard reception against Purdue. Like, I think those guys can play and can do some stuff if called upon. In a game like this, will Ohio State do that? Potentially not. Ryan Day does tend to play it a little more conservatively in big games like this. So if they don't have Emeka Ebuka, you're going to see a lot of Marvin Harrison Jr., some of your guy Julian Fleming, for sure.
I was waiting for it. I've been waiting all week for this.
That people love to hear.
He's not used a whole lot in this offense. Actually, like, it's funny. Like, Carnell Tate is a true freshman who's not played a ton. I think he and Julian Fleming have the same number of receiving yards this year. And Julian Fleming plays, like, every meaningful offensive snap. He's more of, like, a blocker in this offense, and he's a really good one. But maybe they try to unleash him in this game. They also have a player named Xavier Johnson, who's a six-year former walk-on, who plays like a little slot receiver, a little running back, had a nice game last week, had a big game last year against Georgia in the Peach Bowl. He's a weapon for them too. And then they'll play with two tight ends a lot too, especially if they're shorthanded at receivers. So I could see Ohio State rolling with two tight ends a decent amount in this game.
When you mentioned the health of the running backs earlier too, and the offensive line kind of maybe not being up to snuff for a usual Ohio State team, do you think this is an Ohio State team that can run the ball against this front? Penn State, obviously, in the past has had issues with, mm-hmm. last year. They got their doors blown off by Michigan's running game. Do you think that can be an advantage for Ohio State on Saturday?
I don't know that I believe it. I'm curious about it. They're not built the same way as Michigan. Like, they're not a big, burly, powerful offensive line. They're kind of more athletic than they are powerful, but they do want to run the ball. And I, you know, again, watching Penn State in passing, I do feel like, and at times teams have run the ball okay. Like, I thought West Virginia and Illinois at different points ran the ball okay against Penn State. Obviously not for the entirety of the game, but, like, it makes me wonder whether or not Ohio State might be able to make a little something on the ground game. It will depend on who they have available. So last week they were down a few guys, and they played Dallin Hayden, who's a sophomore, who played a decent amount for them last year because they had a bunch of injuries at running back, and Dallin was quite good when he played last year. And they Ohio State came into this season with a plan to redshirt him, and then they had to use him last week, and then he looked like the best any running backs looked this year. He had 11 carries for 76 yards and a touchdown against Purdue. I don't know if you'll see him, or we thought Travion Henderson was going to play last week and then he didn't play. Don't know what's going on with Mayan Williams, and Chip Trainum got hit pretty hard on a play where he definitely got his bell rung. And so I don't know if he'll be available this week either, but I do think they're going to try to run it. They were not good running the ball against Maryland. They sort of got challenged to run it better, to be more efficient. And the staff, I think, tried to figure out some plays that better suit the offensive line and the running backs in particular. And then it felt like they hit on that against Purdue. But the caveat with that is Purdue doesn't have a very good rushing defense. So yeah, that could have just been like a get right game, gain some confidence, but it turns out they're not actually all that good of a running team. But I think they're going to test it against Penn State, because I don't think they want to go in this game and drop back 45 times with this offensive line against this pass rush.
Yeah, that, gosh, that, as soon as you said that, Bill, I'm thinking, yeah, that is not the plan, right? That cannot be the plan. If that's the plan, something's gone terribly wrong. I'm going to take this in a different direction because Bill's a busy guy. I mean, he's on the podcast. They are on all the time.
I want nonstop.
Too much. Yeah. I want to know how many feathers Audrey has ruffled at Ohio State by calling it the podcast instead of the podcast.
Oh, that's sorry. All I'm curious about right now. That's true.
I'll say this.
I'm going to get him canceled right here. Yeah.
We've had a handful of guests on our shows. Only a few recurring guests, and I still think that Audrey has gotten the best reception out of any of them.
Ooh,
yeah, see, people really enjoyed when they came on last year.
See, everybody likes a train wreck, right?
We'll see how long that lasts.
I wanted to take it in a different direction, Bill. If Penn State fans are coming out to this game, because I'm sure some of them will, right? It's a kind of easy trip, 5-hour drive out there. What are a couple places they should go to, a couple stops? Mm. You know, what should they check out?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you're looking for. There's a pretty good brewery scene here in Columbus. The big one is probably Land Grant, and just in terms of like space to sit, like cool vibes, you know, the beer's pretty good.
Is that Land Grant as in the Land Grant trophy?
That's right. Well, it's Land Grant Brewing. Yeah.
Okay, I like it.
They usually have pretty good food trucks there. And as long as like they have a really nice outdoor area and like expansive outdoor area, and I think I don't know, it might rain on Friday, but I think it's supposed to be okay this weekend, so that'd be a good spot to go to. There's a place in downtown. It's across the street from the Blue Jackets Arena. It's like a little, it's pretty nondescript. It's hard to see and notice unless you're going there specifically, but it's called Wario's, like the video game character.
I'm interested.
I don't know why it's called that, but that's what it's called. And it's a sandwich place. They make cheesesteaks. Mm-hmm. They make chicken cutlet sandwiches. On weekends, they have like a special sandwich of the week. Like sometimes it's a meatball sub. Sometimes it's a like a buffalo chicken sandwich. Like I've never had a bad sandwich from there. And at the risk of like losing my Philadelphian card.
No, you should not
do it.
You don't need to do this to yourself.
I'm gonna tweak it. Okay. It's a very good cheesesteak. It's a very good cheesesteak.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a great
important distinction there.
Pushing elite cheesesteak.
Pushing elite. Yes. It's expensive.
It has to go from great to elite still is what I'm hearing.
I like it. I was intrigued by the brewery. That'll maybe be maybe that's where I'll go. We'll see. I don't know. Not that I have to keep tabs
like
on any baseball
really
games this week. So
you're really just giving Rex for me to watch the Phillies game while Audrey watches me melt down. That's all this is.
So there is a section of town called German Village, which is not too far from campus. There's a bar called Gresso's, which is like actually a Philly sports bar. Like they have they have Phillies watch parties there and Eagles watch parties there. So if you want to be around kindred spirits, that's probably the
that's
place
right.
To go.
Maybe I'll slap these overalls on and head on over there. By the way, these overalls, I know I said it before the podcast. I don't know how anyone wears overalls. They're just wildly uncomfortable. This is awful. It's been one of the worst 20 minutes of my comfort in my life.
Well, we hope this was not one of the worst 20 minutes of our podcast here at the Nittany Dispatch. We'll see. We'll let the listeners decide that. We're not going to put Bill on the spot with a prediction because it is too early in the week and we have no idea availability this week. Like who's going to be playing, all of that. But be sure to follow Bill Landis on Twitter as well. Bill, where are you at on X? What's the handle now?
Don't call it X. It's Twitter.
It's Twitter. Yeah, it is at Bill Landis. 25. So there's three L's in the middle of that there. It's kind of weird. And I have to use the 25 because there's some other Bill Landis who like has the handle and never tweets. And every time I message him and say like, hey, can I have your handle? Like he never responds. So
hey, I have a 25. Tough. I had that. Yeah. I had that happen on Instagram. I was fortunately able to get John Sauber on Twitter, but anytime I've had to switch it for like a job or anything, I create a new account and steal this one back. So I have it just lingering there in case I want to take it back.
Smart. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Incredible. Well, thanks for joining us, Bill. Yeah. Look forward to seeing you in the press box Saturday afternoon. I keep saying Saturday night because it feels like this should be a night game.
It's because it should be. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe it's because it should be.
Yeah. Big noon kickoff, baby. Let's go. It's going to be great for us as writers to get in and out of there. But Bill, look forward to seeing you Saturday. Appreciate you coming on here. And maybe you will be our first recurring guest. We'll see.
Oh, wow. I would love the honor, but I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Man, I gotta say, one, what a great interviewee Bill was. Two, those overalls, just fantastic. And as I said moments ago, I'm still glad that I did not have to wear them past that 20 minutes because it was not a comfortable endeavor.
That's an absolute outfit choice, John. And a little backstory here. During the Phillies Braves series, while I was getting my heart broken after game four, I texted John and some other Phillies fans on the beat, and I said, "You guys getting the overalls now?"
But little did I know that those overalls were already in my living room because I had ordered them because I was that confident in the series and I was very excited to wear them whenever Audrey would be in my presence. My wife may have told me I look like an idiot. She's probably correct for that.
She's always correct.
Yeah, it's tough to argue on that front. But no, it was a wonderful interview with Bill, who is fantastic, does a fantastic job. As we mentioned there, make sure you follow him on Twitter. Make sure you
some good listen to Columbus him on the podcast. Good Columbus Rex there.
Yes.
That's something, John, you and I are going to have to figure that out. We'll be making the
specifically Philly related ones.
Yes. We'll be making the drive out Thursday. So we will have some time to hopefully get to some of these Landis recommendations. But absolutely, yeah. If you don't follow Bill, read up on his work, listen to their podcast. They do a tremendous job. Really great insight there. Glad we were able to do that. John, what else do we need to get to with this matchup? Because I feel like it's just the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is. I think, you know, there are some broader points. Mm-hmm. Bill did a great job of breaking down some of the minutia for us, you know, some of those matchups that, you know, we had questions about. And I think that fans probably had questions about. But more broadly, like, we haven't talked about how you and I feel about this game yet, right? Like, we've kind of been talking around it for the past couple of weeks because mm-hmm. we've all been waiting for this kind of moment to get here. I mean, we can just do this each side of the ball to make it a little bit easier, you know? Do you think Penn State has an advantage on either side of the ball?
Yeah, I absolutely think Penn State does on the defensive line, specifically these defensive ends. To me, that is the one matchup. I think Penn State might be able to not only have an advantage there, but feast.
Game-wrecking type stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, we always talk and, you know, maybe this is telling as I say this right now, we have not talked about this. Maybe it isn't. Maybe I'm just been doing this too long and overthinking it. But typically when we get into games like this, James Franklin mentions the game wrecker on the other side, right? The person that they think can ruin the game. Well, we know who can do that from last year. We saw JT do that, absolutely take Penn State's lunch money. But Franklin didn't say that this week. And maybe he just didn't. Maybe they really don't feel like there is that guy on the other side of the ball. I don't know, but I do think Chop Robinson, Adisa Isaac, and Dennis Sutton, to me, these are guys that are going to have a lot of opportunities. And so, yes, Marvin Harrison, absolutely out of this world,
yes.
Supremely talented wide receiver. But you know what? It's hard for Marvin Harrison to beat you if Kyle McCord can't throw the ball, right? Like, this is that's some next level stats right there that I'm presenting, John. Hard for Marvin Harrison to beat you if you can't throw the ball.
I think this could, you've mentioned a couple times this week that 2018 matchup, we've joked about the great to elite thing. I think if Ohio State has success offensively, it's going to look a little bit like that. If you remember the lot of screen game, a lot of getting the ball out early. I think that's what it will have to look like this week for Ohio State, because I think Penn State's defensive line is, it's not just an advantage. Like, there's a world where Penn State wins by 13, 14 because their defensive line just terrorizes Ohio State and they can't do anything offensively, right? Like, this is
that
good of a defensive line. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to dip a little bit into my Eagles fandom here, they have Penn State has done such a fantastic job of building, and what I see as, and this, I see it this way because of my Eagles fandom in part, building in the most important part of the sport now, right? It's mm-hmm. you know, wide receivers and cornerbacks are wildly important as well. I'm not dismissing that, but if you can win in the trenches consistently, you can win football games, right? Like in Penn State's defensive line is better than Ohio State's offensive line. And I tend to think Penn State's offensive line is just as good as, if not better than Ohio State's defensive line, with the concession JT. That like JT Umalau is a game wrecker.
He should scare you, especially after last year. Absolutely.
For sure. But Olu Fashanu is the type of tackle that can take him out of the game, right? He's going to line up on the other side because Jim Knowles is very smart and good at what he does. But like if they line him up across from Olu and everyone gets the matchup that we all want to see, then I think Penn State wins it. But I don't think we're going to get that. I do think he's going to get his, I think the Penn State will probably help on him, get some chips in on him. Katron Allen, I think, is going to be important in this game because I think his pass blocking is going to matter.
Yep.
But yeah, I think they have an advantage where it matters most. And, you know, you mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. Like Kalen King's really good. Like, and if they match up against each other, maybe Johnny Dixon matches up on Marvin Harrison Jr.
Maybe you see Dixon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, this is really not a good corner.
Yeah. It's not a usual cornerback matching up against Marvin Harrison Jr. He's going to get his. I'm fully confident in that. I'd be kind of surprised if Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't finish with at least 80 yards in this game, like at the absolute minimum.
I was going to say, I think he goes over 100.
Less than 100 would be kind of surprising.
And I think too, man, you look at James Franklin mentioned Brian Hartline and the work that he's done both as a coach, as a coordinator, but also as a recruiter. I mean, John, I'm just thinking back to their run on receivers. I mean, it's insane.
Unreal.
Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. I mean, like you watch these guys in the NFL now and you're like, oh yeah, I remember watching them in college. Like it's just Penn State fans. I want to say enjoy watching Marvin Harrison Jr., but I know you're not. You're going to absolutely hate it. If I was in your position, I totally would too. But just know that you are watching the best receiver in college football. Now, the Ohio State, the health standpoint, right? Like that's the other thing we don't know. I say the injury front, Ryan Day has been really playing it close to the vest. So we've got an injury standoff here between James Franklin and Ryan Day, but
classic.
Ohio State is much. Yeah, this is what you guys really tuned in for, I'm sure. The nitty gritty injury details, but Ohio State is more banged up than Penn State is right now. Like to me, that Penn State, again, you got Trey Wallace back. You're trending in the right direction. Where Ohio State, I mean, there's some real uncertainty there about who's going to be available and how effective are they if they go. But that to me is like, man, that receiving core. But again, Emeka Buka, we're not sure. Like right now, as we record this Tuesday night, we've still got a ways to go.
Yeah, and Ryan Day said, hopefully Ohio State is going to get those guys back, which is not an answer to the question. I hate to break it to everyone that it's not a real answer. I'm sure that they are hoping to have some of their best players back.
Well, I hope to win the lottery too, John.
That would be very nice. But getting Egbuka back would be enormous for the Ohio State offense. I think Penn State has an advantage at quarterback here too. I know Bill said he would take Kyle McCord over Aller right now to win a game, which is an understandable opinion, to be clear. But to me, I think I would take Aller just because I think he's capable of more than what he's shown currently.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know that it's like an upside thing where it's like, oh, down the road, he's going to be good. I think he's capable of these things now. They're just not really asking him to do those things. And if they need him to do those kind of things, stretching the field, making really tight window throws, making plays happen to win the game, if they need him to step up in those situations and they kind of fade away from it and try and do things a different way, I don't think that's on Aller, right? Like, I think it's on the coaching staff. Now, who knows? Maybe they you know, put him in position to succeed with his arm talent and to really lead this team to a win. But I do think there is a world where if we want to talk about like, if Penn State loses, what does it look like? I think it looks like
John. Our viewership numbers just are going to plummet with that. If you're
I'm not saying that it's going to happen.
Picks for the end, but no,
yeah, we'll save the picks.
Carry on.
But if they lose, I think it's because they didn't ask Aller to do enough. And I know it probably sounds weird because they've won all these games and we talked about already in the first segment, right? Like about like having your identity and knowing what your identity is. I just think they can expand upon that. I just think that they can be more than what they have been. I think in a game like this, this is when you want to do that.
Two things for me. Penn State, Drew Aller's been turnover free in a Nittany Lion uniform. 16 games, has not turned the ball over, right? That's massive. Like that in itself.
He did kind of try to against West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. No, they're definitely, yeah. Some of those throws he's lucked out on, but like sometimes you get a little help, right? Sometimes we talked earlier about turnover luck, right? This season, sometimes the ball bounces your way. But to me, the other thing that could really swing this game, and I was thinking about this earlier today, you think back on this series, or at least the past decade, man, special teams play, right? How many times have we seen it? Penn State fans, you think back to 2016 to the Grant Haley scoop and score coming off the block field goal. There have been some massively important special teams plays. Now, when we talked earlier this week, John, after our post-UMass episode, we were saying Daquan Hardy coming off of an all-world performance, two punt returns for a touchdown. James Franklin even said Tuesday, he was like, I know you guys asked me about this, and I was thinking about it too. Like, why wasn't Hardy our guy before this, essentially? Which he did say, you know, how many times do you really evaluate a punt returner in live settings, right? You just don't see
it. Yeah, you just can't know. Like, and that's like, that's a defensible argument, yeah. Like that you just can't know how a guy will handle it in live settings, and already handled it as well as you possibly could.
But I take that into Saturday and I say, okay, this is an area where momentum swings matter. Another thing I'll say to this, to the momentum point, because I'm a believer in momentum in games. Penn State, you're coming out on the road. What happens if you fall behind early? Because we haven't seen Penn State really have to play from behind at all, right? I believe, was it the Illinois game, I think? Northwestern?
Yeah, Northwestern. I think it was Northwestern,
yeah.
They were down 10-3, yeah.
And that was the only time this season.
You kind of know you're going to win that game still. Like, you know what I mean?
It's not, you're sleepwalking through it. There's really not many people there to see it, right? But I do think there's something to that, right? Like, how do you play from behind? And that ties into the Drew Aller point, right? We haven't seen him in these big, massive moments yet. I think he's capable of the moment. I think he's capable of rising up and being really excellent in that moment. But we just haven't seen it yet. And I think in a game like this, there are going to have to be a handful of plays that Aller makes where you say, you know what? Yeah, this is your guy. And I think that's every big game, right? Like, this is where, and again, this is a 365-day-a-year race to try and catch up to Ohio State and eventually beat them. This is where your five-star player needs to play like a five-star, right? Like, this is where the fact that you've closed the gap in the trenches, this is where it's time for that to show up. Because again, like, yes, Penn State's been here before. They've been here close before. The 2 1-point losses are something that have eaten away at this program and those inside that building for a long time. But this is a chance to turn the tide a little bit and to kind of showcase these wins that you've had throughout the months and the years building up to this point. So, yeah, John, this is going to be a fun
that's
one.
What, yeah, like this, the thing is, this game this Saturday is so much more than this Saturday, than this season, than this team. Like, this is, and I plan on, you know, writing about this week. This is what it's all built to, right? The idea that I think everyone was kind of stuck on, like, next year is the year. That kind of idea. I don't know. I think they're going to be very good next year, to be
clear. I think the schedule kind of, I think the schedule is going to damper some of that with.
Yeah. But I still think they'll make the playoff just because it's an expanded playoff. Field. They should be one of the top eight or so teams in the country. But this is a chance to prove that you're one of the four best, which I think is a drastically different thing. Maybe, you know, it's tough to get in the mind of high school kids nowadays, but like,
you're closer to it than I am, John. Go for it.
That's true. I'm still in my brisk in my 20s, you know, not quite in the 30s yet. But no, I think this is like, maybe in the eyes of recruits, like, this is, you know, making the playoff when it's one of the top four is different than making it when you're one of the top 12, right? You're still seen as like the elite of the elite. And getting in that final year where it's only four teams, I think would have a big impact and would have like, would create a ton of momentum for a program that, like, say what you will about James Franklin, he's excellent at creating momentum for this program on the recruiting trail and turning when good things happen on the field, he makes them even better off the field, right? Like he is really good at that. He's, you know, I think clearly one of the 10 best coaches in the country. I don't know that that's an argument anymore, although I think some people would try to argue it.
I
think like he is so good at taking these on-field victories and turning them into off-field victories, which then turns into more on-field victories and like stacking that stuff up and building up upon it. This is it though. This is the one. Yeah. Like this is I've said it all week. I've been saying it all season. I think they're better than Ohio State. I don't think this is in years past, even in 2016, I did not think they were better than Ohio State, but they won because it's the sport, right? It's how it goes sometimes. And listen, they could lose Saturday for that same reason, right? Even if I think they're the better team, but like Ohio State lost in 2016 because of mistakes they made, not because of anything. I mean, Penn State had to take advantage of it, but that was more about Ohio State's mistakes. Penn State, if it plays without making mistakes and plays its game and plays at a high level, is going to win this game on Saturday. Like to me, point blank, period, that's it. They are a better team than Ohio State. This is the chance to go prove that they're not just on that level, that they can be above that level moving forward.
And really for the first time since 2017, when Penn State went in there, I'm entering this game saying this is a roster that is capable of beating Ohio State at their place, right? Like this is to me, and again, all off season, I've been writing this, I've been saying it, Ohio State to me looked like this was a team that was going to come back to human levels, right? Again, this is a team since James Franklin's been here. Ohio State's made the playoff 5 times, right? We can point to the 1-8 record that Franklin has against Ohio State. They've been playing out of this world, right? Like the thing that always kind of defies logic is Penn State has played these guys closer in most years than they should have, right? And, you know, you talk about 2014 and kind of the forgotten game where a sanctioned team essentially takes them to double overtime and Penn State loses there, but in a game they had no business being in. And Ohio State fans, I'm sure, are well aware of that number, but also well aware of the fact that this is a team that's played them really well sometimes. And I remember we've talked about this with James Franklin in previous years. Sometimes they're just teams, just programs that you match up well against, right? And that's kind of what this has become. And so I'm with you, John. I mean, I think if Penn State, and they don't even have to play a perfect game because they're not. Nobody's going to play a perfect game. But if Penn State applies the recipe that they've been using and sprinkles in a few more deep shots that I know that they're capable of connecting on, a few more explosive plays, whether that's in the run game, because, I mean, let's be honest, John. Like, at some point, Nick Singleton is going to bust off a run of 40-plus yards, right? Like, it's a matter of time. I think it's just, you can point to various factors and way teams have played them that it's happened, whether that's as a kick returner, whether that's as a running back. Like at some point, he's too good for this not to happen. But I'm with you. I mean, I think Penn State is the better team, which is not something we have said often, if at all, in this series. I mean, 17-18, we would have these discussions. But I do think this is their chance to strike. And we can say that, yeah, sure, Penn State in 2024, they should be poised to this. But you know what? Nothing is a given in this sport. You're one injury away from 2024. We have no clue what the future is for Manny Diaz. I'm writing a story about it this week on The Athletic. And man, I will say, John, players absolutely love this guy. Like that to me was the takeaway. They love this guy. And I mean, it's just been this perfect fit in so many ways. But yeah, don't hang your hat on 2024, even though you should make the playoff, because it's not a given. Like, this is your moment right now. And Saturday afternoon, we're going to find out whether or not Penn State's ready for it.
So here we are. Do you want to go first?
Are you ready for it, John?
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first. I will go first, okay. Because all offseason, I've been saying I thought Penn State would go 11-1. And I said that I thought they match up better with Ohio State than they do with Michigan. So who would I be, John, to sit here on Tuesday, October 17th and change my mind? It's not me. Now, if I really felt that Penn State was not capable of this, I absolutely would have changed my mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, if things had gone poorly the first 6 weeks, I think it would be you to do that.
Yeah, absolutely would have been me. I would have bailed on that in a hurry. But I really do believe that this is a Penn State team that we haven't seen it play its best football yet, but it's still playing really damn good football with what it's been doing. Yes, it's going to be tough playing at Ohio State, yes, I do think it helps you that this game is at noon and not at night. Conversely, you got to play Michigan later in the year in Beaver Stadium at noon, so it evens out. But I am picking Penn State, and for the sake of consistency, so I don't mess this up, I've got Penn State 28, Ohio State 24. So, John, are we aligned? Because we have not talked about our score predictions.
We are partially aligned. I don't think this is, and this is one thing I think I've been, you know, kind of against the grain with all week. I don't think this is going to be a high scoring game. Yeah. I will go as far to say as I think 13-7 is more likely than like 35-31. I think these are two of the best defenses in the country. A quarterback on one side and Kyle McCord, who I don't think is playing up to the standard that Ohio State is used to. Quarterback and Drew Aller, who is capable of that, but we haven't seen it yet. But I think we both agree that we both think he can do that. We talked about this is we think it's a better team. We think that they match up better with Ohio State than most other programs do. It's just all lining up, right? Like the only aspect I think that doesn't line up is that it's on the road. And I just like, I don't know if that's going to matter here. I'm taking Penn State to win 21-17. I think, like I said, this is going to be lower scoring. The over-under, I think, was 46.5. I kind of think that might come down a little more, but I do think it's going to be a lower scoring game. I just think Penn State's defense is too good at the end of the day. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if one of Ohio State's scores comes off of a turnover from the offense or something like that, just because, or a short field of some sort because of a long return. I just think this Penn State defense is too good to give up, you know, 25 plus 30 plus points in this game. And I think they're going to announce their arrival, right? Like these defensive ends, it's not just Adisa Isaac. It's not just Chop Robinson. It's also Denai Dennis Sutton. It's also Amin Vanover. It's also Zariah Fisher. Like this is a really group, deep defensive end group that is going to just wreak havoc all game. And so I think they're going to be the reason that Penn State wins. I think this is going to be, you know, there's a world where this is, honestly, I would say it's going to be like 21-10 that Ohio State scores late and tries to make it close and can't come back. But yeah, I think this is Penn State's chance. This is their golden opportunity. And if they don't take it and if they don't capitalize, then we'll be having a very different discussion Saturday after the game.
John, I think that sound we just heard was Penn State fans reaching for the Rolaids after you and I both picked them to win in Columbus. I do think, though, like I think we're onto something here. Again, we're around this team every day. We follow it closely, intently, and you see the strides that have been made, right? And I think so much of the play in the trenches is massively important in this game. But again, you got to go out and do it, right? You can have the better team on paper, but you got to go out, you got to do it. And oh, by the way, you got to do it on the road. You and I will be there in the press box at the Horseshoe. We will see the I get dotted and all of the pageantry that comes with it. I really like their stadium. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I will never say anything bad about their stadium and their press box. Like, Penn State fans, if you're going out to this game, I do think you will enjoy yourselves, not only because we're picking Penn State to win, but also because I think there's a lot of cool stuff to do in Columbus. Very nice, fun area for y'all to check out. The stadium, I think it's tremendous. It's really well done. And something that came up this week, I'm working on a story with my colleague Cam at The Athletic about, I won't say rivalry, but about this series that's emerged, this tightly contested Penn State Ohio State series in some regards. And one of the things that's come up is, you know, even if Penn State players, past, present, aren't thrilled about going to Columbus, there's a level of respect there. There's a level of, we love playing there because we know it's going to get loud. We know that these people love football too, just like we do here in State College. Like, there's that mutual respect that I think makes this really, really cool. But again, at some point, Penn State, you got to take one of these. And I think Saturday we see it. John, you and I will be firing up the podcast Saturday late afternoon, because noon kick. But we'll have a podcast to your feeds by Sunday morning at the latest. We will be there to document anything and everything that happens in the Horseshoe. Please, if you're tuning in today, if this is the first time, we hope it's not the last time, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. We will be coming your way the rest of the season, whatever in the world that looks like. But until then, I'm Audrey Snyder. He's John Sauber. Man, it's time for us to get out of here.
It has been a long evening.
Take care.